I got a big issue with Kamala Harris coming to me with a list of stuff that I need to do when she is the representative of an administration who was slammed for not doing enough over and over again, not doing enough about the affordability crisis, not doing enough about the growing wealth gap, not doing enough about the fact that we had 500 billionaires at the beginning of the Biden administration and 2,500 at the end of the Biden administration, not doing enough to stem the violence in Gaza. Like, this is like Kamala, if she's going to do this, it needs to be, I learned this, I made these mistakes, I'm going to do this differently, and this is what I am going to do for you.
So it's Pick Week happening in America right now. We have the president of the United States just got back from China, and everybody is wondering what that means for J.D. Vance and Marco Rubio, because we don't know what is going to happen on the global scene and whether or not that's even going to matter in 2028. Do you think that foreign affairs is going to matter when we get to these campaigns for a Democratic nomination?
Yeah, I think it's absolutely going to matter. I mean, I think we have to put everything back together in the world order. We have to restore, you know, America's place as, you know, kind of the stable country throughout all of this. We want to remain the reserve currency, like the world banks on the U.S. dollar. If we lose that, it's going to be an incredibly bad thing for our economy. So yes, I mean, foreign policy chops are going to play into this this presidential race for sure.
So we've got Democratic candidates and then also obviously the Republican candidates, which we don't spend a lot of time talking about the Republicans, but this looks like one of these moments where Marco Rubio had the leg up because he was the one with the president overseas while J.D. Vance was holding down the fort at the White House.
Yeah, we've had a couple of these situations where Rubio has sort of been a kind of platformed by the president. J.D. Vance has been sort of on the side. Like, I think, you know, Rubio in the makeshift Mar-a-Lago situation room when the Iran invasion started, J.D. Vance stuck in the actual situation room, but kind of, you know, way far away from the actual president and the decision makers. So it is interesting the way that's to see the way that Trump is treating both of them and who's going to actually get the nod for going forward, if either of them.
But on the Democratic side, is there anybody that you really think about that has like foreign policy chops? Like who's running who you think could carry their own weight in foreign policy right now?
Yeah, I think we're actually probably in a place where we're probably, I would say, a little weaker than usually we are in the Democratic primary. I mean, I would say, you know, Mark Kelly, I think, has got a little bit of experience in it. You know, Gavin Newsom, as the governor of California, has to deal with a lot of foreign countries and foreign leaders. And, you know, if they come to California, Kamala Harris, obviously, as the former vice president, has a lot of experience in foreign policy. But I wouldn't say that I necessarily think of her as a foreign policy expert. The way that we have in the past, where you had like a Chris Dodd or a John Kerry or Hillary Clinton, you know, some of these people who've actually been Secretary of State before. You know, Joe Biden was incredibly deep on foreign policy.
He was the chair of the Foreign Relations Committee.
Yeah. So, you know, I don't feel like we've got anybody like that. I'm trying to look at the list to see if there's anybody that I'm forgetting right off the top. But I mean, Buttigieg
probably has something to say because, you know, transportation secretary, he negotiated some international agreements and that kind of thing. But you don't really think of him as like a war. I mean, he's deserving of war. I mean, so that's probably his really big playing card, was that he actually was in the Middle East and served in the military.
I agree with that. I think, you know, any type of the veterans in this race are going to have a small lane to run in that always lends credibility to kind of your foreign policy positions.
Right. So what else do we see out there? I mean, you've been paying attention. You always do. You are our man on the markets.
So
what do you see?
Yeah, here? This is what I think we should do is, I think, you know, we've been at this for about 4 months, 5 months exactly. We're kind of midway through 2026. I would like to just run through our list of 19 candidates and let's discuss, have the people had a good year, a bad year, or are they about the same? And the way that we're going to judge that is it more likely or less likely that a candidate is going to be president than it was back in January? You're going up, down, or kind of staying the same. And we can kind of, if you've got rationale for it, we can do that. So, And I'm happy to take these in whatever order you want. If there's ones that you want to particularly spend some time on, that's great. But, you know, Gavin Newsom is sort of at the top of the prediction market lists and has sort of been seen as a front runner in this race. Do you have any opinion whether Gavin Newsom's had a good year, bad year, or kind of just stayed the same?
I think he's had a good year, but he's on the verge of having a really bad year. And what do I mean? I mean, if a Republican wins the governorship in California, that matters to Gavin Newsom more than it does to any other person in America outside the state of California, right? If you live in California, it's going to matter to you a lot. But if you're Gavin Newsom, having a Republican sitting in the governor's office is like having an Oppo research shop sitting in Sacramento, just piling, pouring through everything you've done over the last 8 or 16 years since he was lieutenant governor even.
Yes. Yeah, it really could be bad. And he could have endorsed somebody in this race and made it a little bit more clear of kind of who should be the winning. And so, you know, look, I think there's still a possibility of a Democratic lockout as opposed to a Republican lockout. But obviously, if it's a Republican lockout, I mean, that's a disaster for Gavin Newsom. I will say that, you know, Gavin Newsom also is a little bit of a victim of his own success here. It's like he had such a good 2025, taking on Trump, sparring with Trump, trolling Trump on Twitter. You know, he was at 35, 36 at some point, like kind of November, December of 2025. And now he's sort of, there's been some attrition. He's like down to 23 and a half in the prediction markets. You know, and I don't think that's necessarily anything that he's done. It's just sort of like people are starting to look at other candidates in this race. And so it's starting to kind of like, he's going to have some natural decay there, I think. And his actual polling numbers are down just slightly as well.
So that's a good way of putting it. It's like natural gravity, you know, because everybody else is going to level up a little bit as people are paying attention to them, and he's just naturally going to either stay the same or slightly decline.
Yeah, I think Newsom, it's going to be, and we should say, like, when we're talking about any of this stuff, it's all way too early to really know anything at this.
It's never too early. That's the whole point of this podcast.
No, you're right. It's not too early. But to really know something and get real hard predictions. But I think the campaign is really going to matter to Gavin Newsom, how he performs in the debates, in speeches, how he does, like how he sets up his organization. That is going to be incredibly critical for him, because I think people sort of like him to some degree, but then there's also a, but I'm not sure. And so he really has to break through that and kind of show what kind of candidate he can be. Totally. So I think he's down a little bit. Like, I think his chances today are not as good as they would have been if the election had been held, you know, January 1st. But I think he's still fine. And he's still right at the top of this thing. Vice President Harris would be next. What do you think?
I think she's in a better shape today than she was in December. I think her tour for her book went really well. I think there was some, you know, people had some feelings about her earlier in the beginning of the year. But I think now that people are starting to think seriously, I'm hearing people say the dynamics for her in the party are just so strong because we spent $1 billion, you know, telling everybody how great she was. African Americans are a huge chunk of the Democratic Party. Women are a huge chunk of the Democratic Party. And so she's just going to start off in a better place if she decides to get in.
I agree with you in terms of her positioning. And yes, she is leading the polls still. She's slightly down from where she was in January, but that's, you know, mainly on name recognition. I do think that she's got a problem, and she's just, there is an issue with having lost to Trump. And I think if Kamala Harris wants to be president of the United States or wanted to be president of the United States, she needed to run for governor of California first. Like, she needed to have some break and some change on the resume, because right now, when you look at her resume, the last thing you see is lost to Donald Trump in a presidential election, and was also part of a Biden administration that set her up to lose to Donald Trump in a presidential election. And that is not good. And it's like, what's changed? What's different? Why now, you know, when you couldn't get it done in 2024? And I think that's pretty problematic for her. There was an article last week about donors, like, kind of basically saying, please don't do this. We do not want to support you. We want somebody new. So I think she's got a good foundation, and I'm thinking that will probably kind of crumble as that will decay as well, and probably at a greater rate than Gavin Newsom's. I also will say, you know, our friend Jesse Larrick in his newsletter was talking about sort of all of this kind of kumbaya messaging coming out of Democrats. And he, like, you know, quotes AOC and Buttigieg. And he's got Kamala Harris. And this is how, and he actually thinks that Kamala is now starting to find her footing on the stump. And this is the quote that he uses to do that, is that, you know, Kamala's saying, "Our American revival has to be more than just legislation. We need sweeping project of civic renewal, one that helps mend the economic, political, and social fracture that brought us here today." And then he's like, we can start in our own neighborhoods, volunteer at a phone bank, give time at a local nonprofit, or even, look, when you're doing a Costco run, ask that single mom or dad next door if there's anything you can pick up for them. I have no problem with any of these sentiments. I believe all Americans should be engaging in these things. I got a big issue with Kamala Harris coming to me with a list of stuff that I need to do when she is the representative of an administration who was slammed for not doing enough over and over again, not doing enough about the affordability crisis, not doing enough about the growing wealth gap, not doing enough about the fact that we had 500 billionaires at the beginning of the Biden administration and 2,500 at the end of the Biden administration, not doing enough to stem the violence in Gaza. Like, this is like Kamala, if she's going to do this, it needs to be, "I learned this. I made these mistakes. I'm going to do this differently. And this is what I am going to do for you." And I just, coming out of the box with stuff that I need to do, like, that is not, I mean, that is not the kind of responsibility that you need to really show me that you're ready to run for president again, or at least to have any kind of chance of winning. But anyway,
okay, so we're going to put you down.
That's the end of my rant. I think she's done great over the last 6 months, but I still don't see the rationale. And maybe it's up because, you know, three or four months ago, we thought she wasn't even going to run. So, you know, she clearly looks like she's going to. Yeah. All right. What I would say is our roller coaster candidate, and that is Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, because she has been up and down and up and down all in the period of 4 months.
I say she's up right now. I think her stock's up. I think, look, she's been out there. In particular, she went down to the South. She's been out. She was in Montgomery for the big rally about voting rights. And so at a time when people have been giving Bernie some shit about not speaking up enough, people are wondering where the Democrats are, what should we do? Everybody's wringing their hands. She's in the middle of that fight. I mean, at least publicly, she's in the middle of that fight. I think that helps her out in this moment. Also, she had a really great answer to a question about whether or not she was going to run for president. And she was like, "Listen, maybe I will, maybe I won't. That's not what I'm focused on. I'm focused on how do I change this country?" And I just think that kind of gut level spokesmanship, like, that really matters. And people want to know that their leaders are worried about something more than just their own political prospects.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think she's up overall, but I do think, you know, as I mentioned, roller coaster, you know, she kind of started out the year with the Munich Security Conference and not having great answers on foreign policy. You know, as we mentioned at the top of this, foreign policy, I think, is really going to matter in this election. You know, then she comes back, though. She does get involved in a number of these different fights. And whenever she talks, she's getting attention. So she is going to get attention whenever she wants it, and she's going to get her issues covered. I agree with you. The answer with Axelrod was really masterful. And now she's come back this week, and she's got this sort of dispute with Marjorie Taylor Greene, where she's kind of taking her on. And that's developed a whole lot of up and down support, not support, but gotten her into a little bit of a battle with Ro Khanna, which is always good to, you know, start to draw contrast with people. But yeah, I think she's definitely up. And again, I wasn't sure she was going to run, but she sure sounds like she is going to say, "Hey, this is the chance that I've gotten. I'm going to take it." So
it's looking like it.
Yep. All right. John Ossoff.
So John
Ossoff.
Too early
to tell, probably. Yeah. But
go ahead. Too early to tell. He's got to win a Senate race. You know, I'm very superstitious about Georgia. I was in the last Georgia Senate re-election for that seat 20 years ago. So I know it can be a little hinky. But what's going for him right now is apparently a lot of people just really like listening to him. They think that what he's saying and that the force that he has is something Democrats need to have. And if he wins re-election in Georgia, which is a battleground state, a purple state to red, he might have a case to make. It might not be my case, but he has a case to make.
Yeah, he's great. He's great on the stump. So, and the question is going to be, you know, is he going to be able to have a social media presence? Is he going to be able to be on a 3-hour podcast? I mean, I think that's we'll have to see that. Josh Shapiro, the governor of Pennsylvania. This is one where I'm going to go and say I think he has had a bad 4 or 5 months. I don't think it has been particularly good for his campaign.
Really? Why do you say that, Matt?
So I think that, like, I don't think his book was great. I don't think, you know, highlighting these disputes that he had with the vice president's vetting staff and sort of complaining about what the questions were, the answer, like, how does that serve him? Like, how does that make him look good? Like, are you taking shots at the vice president, or are you just, you know, that it didn't do him a lot of favors. Then we find out that he potentially backed a Republican candidate over a Democratic candidate because the Democrat like criticized him over whether he should be the vice president or not. Like, it's just showing that he is like potentially very thin skinned and kind of prone to like complaining and like, you know, thinking about like, oh, woe is me and the and being a victim. And like, we've got that in the White House right now. Like, that is not, that is only going to turn people off. You know, you hear about this like land dispute with his neighbor and stuff like that. It's just like, it doesn't seem like it's the stuff that somebody who wants to be leading the free country should be worried about. Like, they should be worried about the bigger stuff, and they should be worried about what people are going through, not what they're going through. So I think Shapiro's down, and actually he's one of the ones in the prediction markets that you actually do see that sort of drop off. So he was like around 7 in January, and he's down to like under 5, like 4.7 now. And so that's like a relative percentage wise, that's a pretty big drop off. I mean, it's almost an erosion of half of his support. So not quite half, but
that's good. I was at like,
that's interesting. Tepid.
I was at like, he's medium.
Yeah, I think,
but you've won me over. Not, you've won me over. I'm with the thumbs down.
I think he's going down. I think Shapiro down. Yeah. Pete Buttigieg.
Tepid, I think, is even. I don't think he's done anything that's particularly improved his chances or diminished his chances over the last couple months.
Yeah, Pete's just been being Pete. He's gotten on TV. He's done a lot of traveling. He's been in New Hampshire. People seem to like him. I mean, he's not, you know, it's, I think he's of the candidates, he does seem like he's one of the ones that kind of knows what his strengths are, what his weaknesses are. And he's like, you know, just getting out there and talking. And he's a great communicator. And like I said, I think he should be the Democratic chair. I think that's what we need. Somebody interesting who we weren't really talking about that much.
People responded to that. You know, people actually responded to that when we put that up. I think a lot of people thought, maybe this is not a bad idea.
It's a great idea. Let me pat myself on the back for that one. All right, Rahm Emanuel, somebody we didn't really talk about that much, kind of in the early months of this, but he's been out. He's been talking a lot.
I think that improves his chances. I think the point he made to The Economist is the right point. If he's not the candidate, all the other candidates will be saying what he's saying. They'll be talking more like him than they will like others, because he's making policy positions. He's speaking about it from kind of a middle American way. He's going to places, talking to people, you know, in the heartland of the country. That his candidacy might not be the one that makes it, but he's guiding the light for who might be the ultimate Democratic nominee.
Yeah, I just, you know, I like that he has a lot of confidence in his positions and the way that he sees things, but I don't know that he quite has his finger on the pulse of where the Democratic Party is now. It has moved significantly farther left than it was kind of in the 90s and in the early 2000s. And I think there's going to be a lot of energy on the left side of the party. And you know, maybe he'll start talking about universal health care, but I don't think so. But I think that's where people are going to want this party to go by the time we really start, when the actual campaign ads start going. I mean, I think there's going to be some big policy debates. And so that's going to be one of the biggest ones.
I think you're right in the primary. I think he might be right in the general election, though.
Maybe.
I think he might be closer to where the Democratic nominee needs to be rhetorically in the general, even if they take pretty progressive stances in the primary.
Progressive stances. I think you're going to have to appeal to people in the Midwest, and you're going to have to be, there's going to have to be some element of conservatism to you to be able to win the general election, most likely. Speaking of candidates from the, sort of the Midwest, but Andy Beshear, the governor of Kentucky.
You know, let's see what happens to Massey. I don't know if that matters that much to Andy Beshear, but I think Beshear has been also fairly even. I think if Massey survives, then that, I think that tells you something about the Kentucky Republicans, that there's a market there that for a general election could make mm-hmm. Beshear seem stronger in a general election if he is able to
win. That's interesting. Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, I think he's one of the ones that's actually said, hey, I'm probably going to be running, and I think that's going to be fine. Mark Kelly from Arizona.
Oh, I think Kelly's had a good, undoubtedly, he's had a great first quarter of the year.
Yeah,
people are talking about him more. He's raising more money. He's getting in fights with Trump and holding his own. You know, I think he's having a great first quarter.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with all of that. I don't know that he's going to get it done in this sort of modern media environment at the end of the day, but we'll see. JB Pritzker.
I don't know. Maybe that lends to even for me. I don't know. What do you think?
I think up a little bit. You know, look, he's running for governor. He's running for re-election, so he can't get that far out there. But he did the big piece in the New York Times. He's been doing a bunch of really long-form podcast interviews. You know, obviously can self-fund and is, you know, still working on that. So yeah, I think it's about the same, up a little bit. So I think we will see a lot more from JB after the election in November.
Yeah.
Wes Moore, another guy.
Down.
Oh, you think down? Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. I think not getting that Maryland redistricting done, I think was probably the biggest blow to him. His launch has been fine. Like, he's launched his reelection. I think that's going really well. All that stuff's good. I think for national Democratic politics, this is what is it like the most important point is how do you fight back in the midterm? And he wasn't able to do it, at least not yet.
Yeah, and especially when with the pullback of the Virginia redistricting, it would have really, like, you know, highlighted that he did get that success. So it would have really given him on a platform. So I think that's right. I was going to say basically sort of even, but I'll buy that. All right, AOC's new foil, Ro Khanna.
Look, I think Ro Khanna's up only because people are talking about him.
Yeah.
And if you're Ro Khanna and most of the people in the country don't know about you, the more people talk about you, the better life is for you.
Yeah, and it seems like he's poached a bunch of the good Bernie staffers so to help bolster his campaign, which is going to be important as we go forward with this. All right, we're getting sort of into the smaller candidates now, although this didn't used to be a smaller candidate, but I would definitely say she's down. And that's Gretchen Whitmer, the governor of Michigan. I mean, it still seems like she's not going to run.
I heard a really interesting thing. So this is one of these places where, you know, we can say. I heard a very interesting point about Gretchen Whitmer, that she's not thinking about running for president. She is, however, positioning herself to be the next vice president of the United States. And that's really what's going on in her political playbook, is to do everything she can to make her a strong Midwestern, middle of the road, you know, female candidate for vice president to whoever the more progressive presidential candidate might be. That's an interesting take.
I think that's a great take. And that actually matches, because all of the news is she's like 100% Michigan focused. So yeah, that's like, look, a lot of these people are probably running for vice president, and she maybe is explicitly running for vice president, which is interesting. Yeah.
Which is weird. You don't really get that a lot. Positioning themselves now to be
VP. And maybe she's also hearing, like, you know what? We just need a guy to run for president. We just need to not run a woman. And like, I don't subscribe to that. But maybe she's hearing that a lot, and she's like, well, listen, I'm not going to be the one that like loses three times in a row. So like, I'll set myself up to be VP, which is, I think that's pretty wise politically.
So. And look, she's in her 50s. So if she serves for 8 years as VP, she's in her 60s.
That's fine.
She can still run for president, and she will have been vice president. And, you know, if she's got the chops, she might be the first one to pull it off.
Yeah. All right. What about Cory Booker?
I think a little high. I think a little bit higher. He launched his reelection campaign. He got married. That's a big deal. Mm-hmm. And he is out talking and taking on Trump. You know, it's not just the love movement. He's fighting Trump a little bit more on the voting rights, civil rights stuff. I think he's had a good quarter.
Yeah, I think he's done okay. I was going to say sort of even. The only reason I could be convinced to go down is, you know, Real Clear Politics is no longer putting him in the polling averages for candidates, and he was in January, and so now he's come off. So that's probably a little bit disturbing. I mean, that's not the end all be all, but you know, and look, there's not 19 spaces on that, you know, that polling roster. So there's only so many questions they can ask.
So Ruben Gallego, not a great quarter. I don't think he's doing great at all. His best friend, Eric Swalwell, is in the middle of a huge crisis, and he has got a lot of explaining to do about what he knew and when he knew it. You never want to be in the middle of something like that.
Yeah, it's bad. I mean, I think he's in the least bad situation, right? Like, he could have known about it and participated about it, and that's obviously the worst. He could have known about it and not done anything, which is really bad too. Or he could have not known about it and, you know, and legitimately not known about it, which is what he's said, and we can take him at his word, but that's still not great. Like, it's not, you know, maybe you should have known. Like, how do you, I don't know, especially if you consider him as good of a friend as he is. So,
look,
but
you just don't want to have it. Yeah, you don't want to have your name in the middle of all that. I think that's really the...
No.
You may ultimately, we find out there's nothing to know, there's nothing to see here, but just having people mention your name in the middle of a big scandal like that, it's not great.
Yeah, it's not ideal for him. And also, there's so many other candidates. Like, people are going to be looking for reasons to knock people off the debate stages and to, you know, to keep them out. And so that's not good. Yeah. All right, Chris Murphy from Connecticut.
I'm going with even. Meh.
Yeah, I think even's right. He's been making some news, and I think he's doing good work. But you know, he may just be maybe he's gonna realize that his better role is in the Senate. All right, last one, Alyssa Slotkin.
I think she had a good quarter because I don't even think people were thinking about her in November, December of last year, and now we are. So I put that as a plus.
Yeah, she had a little boomlet and kind of news, and she made some stuff, and people are on there, and she did not have a poly market at one point, and now I think she does, and she's like, you know, she was under one, she's still at the same place in Calshi, but I think, you know, people are talking about her, they know that she's there. So anyway, all right, so gun to your head, who will be the nominee? Just make a May 19th prediction.
Somebody that's not even on our list.
Oh, you think no? So Graham Plattner. Your guess is Graham Plattner. after he wins the Senate race in Maine, you're going to have him as the presidential nominee.
I think he can survive. His tattoos can survive the Senate race. I don't know if they can survive a presidential in 2028.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. I'll do that.
What do you think?
I mean, gun to my head, I still think my J.B. Pritzker theory holds. I think he comes in to the right of Ro Khanna and AOC with a couple big ideas, but farther left than any of the rest of the like right centrist candidates. And I think there's going to be a path for him and some energy, especially if AOC doesn't run, that he may be able to ride that. So, and if that is what he's setting up and it's like, it's intentional. I mean, I think he's doing a really smart job, and that's what you hear in a lot of these podcast interviews. So,
yeah.
Yep. I don't know. And he's got, and he can stay till the convention. Like, we know that he can make it because he's got the money. You know, all he's got to do is shake off the billionaire thing. And I think he'll have good answers for that. So,
yeah.
Okay. Anyway, that's where I am today. I can easily change my mind. I reserve the right to revise and extend my remarks at a later podcast.
All right. So we graded the candidates. Now it's up to you. If you have a different grade than the one that we gave, if you think somebody did better or worse than what we did, you should email us at blaze@trailblazepod.com. Email us and let us know. You could also go to our page on Instagram or on X. So hopefully we will hear from you there.
All right. Thanks, Jamal. Great to see you.